Hello, I'm Barnaby Edwards, and I'm the director of King Lear. Being an actor as well as a director, Shakespeare is absolutely the number one, any excuse to do Shakespeare, and especially this production, because King Lear is a late one and it's a very tricky Shakespeare, and the opportunity to do an audio version of it where you can kind of make that clear, you can kind of bring this thing that you can never really do on stage, this fantastic storm with people railing in the wilderness. You can't really do that adequately on stage, and we can on audio. King Lear is a particularly interesting play because it's very domestic. The main sort of plot is about a father and his three daughters and disinheriting them, and it's a very sort of domestic thing. But there's also, it has this wonderful quality of being utterly universal. It's not just about this family breakdown. It's about if something goes wrong at the top of the state, it's like a house of cards or flicking the first domino. Everything goes wrong in the entire kingdom. The weather goes wrong in a sort of pathetic fallacy way. And, you know, wars happen that weren't in the offing. And people who weren't previously villains suddenly become villains because they see opportunities. And everything that happens in that, people sort of die, people kill each other, people cheat and betray each other and torture each other. And all of that comes from one man, you know, Lear, making a selfish decision, and everything else flows. It is just this fantastic, monumental piece about power and how power misused, even for just tiny, selfish little ends, can utterly wreck everything, the entire country, the entire world.
Hello, I'm David Richardson, and I'm the producer of King Lear. I'm so proud of this finished production, actually. The 3 days in studio were amazing. I would happily have paid money to have just sat there and listened to these actors working on this. Everybody did the most incredible work. I was so moved by so many sequences and so gripped by the drama of it all. It's been an incredible thing to work on, and Nicholas Pegg did the most fantastic adaptation of it, but was there throughout the whole recording because he knew the play inside out. He was able to offer little bits of advice along the way, and Barney just got together the most fantastic team of actors and really was in total control of the recording in the most impressive way, because I mean, we were recording it totally out of order. To be across it to that degree when we were doing it completely out of sequence was just awesome, awe-inspiring.
My name is Nicholas Pegg, and for this production of King Lear, I adapted the script for the audio medium, and I also play the Duke of Albany and a couple of other characters. It was lovely to be asked to do something like this. I've done quite a lot of Shakespeare in my time, and I read English literature at university, so I know a bit about Shakespeare, and very interesting challenge to adapt a Shakespeare play for the audio medium. I absolutely was clear from the word go that I wasn't going to, you know, commit sacrilege and stamp all over Shakespeare in my hobnailed boots, because who the hell am I to do that, you know? Pretty good play, King Lear, and I think it'll do fine as it is. But of course, on audio, you have to just do a few things to just make it clear. You know, if a scene is very visual, we have to work out. A lot of my work just involved putting in a lot of instructions for sound effects for the wonderful Howard to work on later on, you know. But yeah, it was a very interesting exercise and I enjoyed it very much.
Well, there are several considerations sort of between being asked to do King Lear and getting through to actually going into the studio with it. I was initially thinking of doing the adaptation myself, and then I thought Nick Pegg is far better Shakespeare expert than I am. He knows Shakespeare to the very fibre of his being. So I thought, let's give it to him. And then I had sort of discussions with him about how we were going to do it. And the script is packed with stage directions. And that was partly to make it sound theatrical and like a film and to make it sound fantastic, but mainly to help the actors so they know whether they're coming off a horse, whether they're walking down a corridor in a kind of West Wing kind of way, or whether they're very quiet and intimate. All of that's in the stage direction. So I wanted to kind of do that because the actors will get the scripts weeks in advance. They'll be able to read through that, and that semi-directs them before I even have to do anything.
Essentially, the approach that I took was to look at the two different versions of King Lear which exist from Shakespeare's time. There are two distinct separate versions, and we actually know quite a lot about King Lear as a play performed in its time. There's a bit of a misconception that we don't know very much about Shakespeare. You know, we do actually know more about William Shakespeare than we know about practically anybody else who was alive at that time, with the possible exception of, you know, kings and queens. And we know that there are two different versions of King Lear, one from 1605, that's the original, and then Shakespeare himself rewrote it about 5 years later in 1610. And the revised version, it's not just, it's sort of got a few cuts here and there. There are bits that are in the first one that aren't in the second one, and there are bits in the second one that aren't in the first one. And the second one is, if you like, the sort of director's cut or the writer's cut of King Lear. And it just so happened that that one actually worked better on audio as well. So that was my first decision, was which one we're going to go with. So I decided we're definitely going to go with the second one, which is the folio version, so it's known as F. But then having done that, there were some other bits in the earlier quarto version, known as Q, which helped us out in an audio way because they're slightly more descriptive in certain ways. So occasionally I would drop in a line from Q, but I was sticking to F because you can't really just pick and mix at will between the two because they are two different scripts. So that was the basic gist of, you know, that's how I went about it. But it was a case of very meticulously going through the whole play and looking at all the little differences. Sometimes there are big differences, a great big speech or even a great big scene in Q that isn't in F. Other times it's just little word differences, individual words here and there. And I was very fortunate to be able to ask for a little bit of assistance and guidance from my old friend Dr. Martin Wiggins, who is a very eminent professor of Shakespeare who works at the Shakespeare Institute in Stratford-upon-Avon. And so, yes, I a lot of emails fired back between Martin and me discussing, you know, the pros and cons of different versions of King Lear.
Because I had loved it so much as a child and because it had stayed with me over the years, the prospect of doing our own version at Big Finish was really important to me. It's an idea I've had for many, many years. It was only when we did Hamlet with Alex Vlahos that I started to think, actually, it might be a viable project. So I took the idea to Jason Hague-Ellery and Nicholas Briggs. They were really keen on the idea, particularly if David Warner was involved as Lear. I mean, fortunately, David was very kind and agreed to do it, and we got that fantastic team of actors around him as well, so it has been such a special experience.
I saw David Warner play King Lear at Chichester, and that was one of the best Shakespeare performances I've ever seen. And everyone I meet, I keep sort of saying, oh, did you ever see David Warner's King Lear? I mean, everyone goes on about David Warner's famous Hamlet, which was rightly praised as being amazing, but no one captured that Hamlet. It was never put on audio, it was never filmed, and it's this great legendary performance from the 60s. And similarly, David Warner's Lear was an amazing piece of work, fantastic, bravura performance. And we had an opportunity, thanks to Big Finish, to actually do it, to capture this, to get this fantastic performance, and indeed go further even than they did at Chichester, because you can be so intimate and so close to the mic. So you can do the big, you know, hurricanoes and cracking cheeks and all that kind of stuff in the storm, but you can also do these tiny, tiny things. And it was a fantastic opportunity to capture a piece of magic.
I'm David Warner, I play King Lear in King Lear. I did do it on stage, and the difference is, of course, as far as I'm concerned personally, is I see it as a visual play. You know, things that you, you know, when the audience is looking and when you're not speaking, you do certain actions and you look at certain people and you just do things that are on audio, I think, is not so easy to convey. In fact, when you guys asked me to do it, I was a bit reluctant because I just really do see it as a, of course, Shakespeare's words and there's the poetry in it and all that, but I just was a bit kind of worried about it because to me it is a visual experience, but I do trust the expertise of Big Finish technicians to make it into something that I not necessarily was expecting.
I think I'm just very proud to have been in a thing with an actor of the caliber of David Warner. To find myself, you know, sharing a scene with an actor with that history, and, you know, it's obviously a great actor, but when you look at the things that he's done over the years, to find myself just, and of course all these other very distinguished actors who we have in this production, it's an absolute thrill.
Also, when I was casting, I had to cast people I knew had done Shakespeare before. It's not that I didn't think people who hadn't done Shakespeare couldn't do it very well. It's that there simply isn't time to teach someone how to read iambic pentameter or blank verse or what the words mean. You know, obviously we can have, you know, we can help out with that, but there isn't time to teach someone from scratch to do that. So you have to have people who absolutely know what it is. And then in certain key roles, obviously David Warner playing Lear, he played it before, but also one of the other hardest parts to do is Edgar. And I knew that Gwilym Lee, who we've used in Doctor Who and other stuff at Big Finish, I knew that he had played Edgar before, and it is an almost impossible part to play unless you've done it for weeks and weeks and weeks before. So although this is a different Edgar to the one that he played with Derek Jacobi, he has complete comprehension of the text.
My name's Gwilym Lee and I'm playing Edgar. It's a kind of exploration as to what makes us human, like how far are any of us away from absolute base madness, you know, nothingness. And I think it's also, it's so advanced and ahead of his time, Shakespeare, in the way that he explores madness, because, you know, I think it was quite a common understanding at the time that you were either insane or sane, and there was no kind of spectrum. Whereas I think Shakespeare does actually explore that there might be a spectrum, that it's not just one or the other, it's not a binary condition. I played Edgar, actually, a few years ago on stage, and Derek Jacobi was Lear for that production, which was just an amazing experience. When I grew up wanting to be an actor, I always wanted to be Edmund, because I always thought that was the kind of flashier part, and maybe I thought it's the more obviously actory part. You know, he's the villain and the schemer, and he has the attention of the women. Edgar's a truly fascinating part. The plot and the story is kind of thrust upon him, whereas Edmund is a schemer and a Machiavellian character that's trying to determine the direction of the plot. Everything is kind of thrust upon him, and he's kind of thrown around on this kind of chaotic, hectic journey, which is an exciting character to play, really.
I spoke to David Warner about who he wanted to play the fool, because that's obviously a key part, and Mike Grady, he'd worked with before, and they were great friends. And again, Mike has that lovely quality. The fool is a very tricky character to play, because he's not actually laugh out loud funny. He's a licensed fool. He's allowed to say stuff to King Lear that other people wouldn't be permitted, or they'd be banished or beheaded or whatever, but the fool is allowed to do that. And Mike Grady has this fantastic sort of just a sincerity and a truth and a genuineness to his performance, as well as sort of doing some madcap stuff.
I'm Mike Grady, and I play a character called The Fool pretty well the first thing. When I contemplated, when I was reading it, and I thought, well, what am I for in this? People are very intellectual about it, and lots of people have written great tomes about it, but what it's about for me is the fact that Lear has given away his power, and in doing so has given away my power, because I'm attached to him. So I think from the very beginning of the play, once the division of the country happens and the daughters are in charge, the fool knows his days are numbered. So he's a dead man walking throughout.
Hello, my name is Lisa Bowerman, and today I will be playing Regan, daughter of Lear. There's that sense occasionally when somebody is ill or near the end of their life, when children you have never seen ever come to visit them suddenly start circling like vultures. And I think we talk so much about families, and especially nowadays with the price of people's properties, whether the price of care, all of those things that are relevant that are talking about now, although in a very, very different way, are things that are relevant to this play. It's what do you do with a man who is selfish and demented, literally, splits up his kingdom? And I think modern audiences will certainly pick up on the family tensions and the money and the dementia, weirdly. And as I said earlier, those of us of a certain age, I always find it fascinating on Facebook, but there's a stage, I mean, I'm past that stage now because I've lost both parents and, you know, all of that you deal with in their later lives. And I watch people on Facebook going from talking about their children to talking about their parents, almost in the same language, actually. And I think that's why I said, as an actress, I certainly find more relevances in it the older I get than I did perhaps when I was younger.
I'm Finty Williams, and I'm playing Cordelia. I always knew, I mean, I think David Warner is just the most glorious human being. And listening to him doing the speech is about, we'll sit and we'll sing and pray and look at gilded butterflies. I mean, that I'd never really heard that properly. That was pretty tricky. He's always been somebody who my parents talked about as being really good at what he did. And he does it with humour and heart and gentleness and kindness. And I did a film with him 16 years ago. As soon as I walked in this morning, he said, "We haven't seen each other since we were in a cornfield in Cornwall." And I just really respect him. I think he's one of those extraordinary people. It shines out of them.
I am Louise Jameson and I'm playing Goneril in King Lear and delighted to be so. Well, I played Cordelia back in the 70s at Stratford, and then I played Regan for Oxford Theatre Company in the late 70s. So it's a hat trick for me to be able to play the third sister. I'm thrilled.
Indeed, you need actresses who aren't just playing either the heroine or the villain. And, you know, Louise Jameson has done Shakespeare till the cows come home. The great thing about audio is that actually probably all the sisters are slightly, the actresses playing them are slightly too old to play them on stage, as it were. But because of that, you have a fantastic variety of voices. And just hearing Louise and Lisa and Finty just being spot on their performances. There's a terrible temptation with the sisters to play them as out-out villains, but they're not. They have some justification. Lear is, you know, he's a swine to them, and he creates them. They are monsters that he creates. They're not monsters at the beginning. So to have actresses of that caliber be able to work out their sort of through journey was fantastic.
It's a bit like EastEnders. I mean, basically, it's a good old family drama, but they just happen to be the royal family. There's intrigue, there's murders, there's stealing, there's poison, there's dysfunctional father-daughter relationships, there's jealousy between the sisters. I mean, it's everything. It's the recipe that you get in a good old soap. It's just told in this epic, brilliant way.
My name's Ray Fearon and I play Cornwall. Do you know what? It's always different playing something on audio as opposed to sort of doing it on stage. Or even on radio, because basically you have the characters around you, so you're more or less relating to people. The thing with audio is you're in a room, and so it's really about listening, and trusting that the director has actually got the right tone of what he wants and what you're doing. So it's kind of being slightly a bit blind.
I'd seen him doing the famous All Black RSC's Julius Caesar, and utterly knocked out by him. So I knew he could do Shakespeare. And for Cornwall, you need someone who is smooth and sexy and an absolute swine. He just does the most horrible things, gouging out eyes, putting people in stocks, terrorising the kingdom. And Ray is just so good at that. He has a beautiful stillness and just a lovely animal menace to him.
I'm Tony Millen and I play Gloucester. Well, some people have said it's the greatest play in the English language. And who am I to argue? No, it is a wonderful play. One of the mature works, which is really an extraordinary piece. The text is very clear and definite, and in that respect, you always know where you are in the play. Each of the characters has a passage through the play, which is, you immediately you know where you are. There is a trajectory for each of the characters, and you can spot where you are immediately.
I'd always heard Tony Millen's voice in my head. An amazing, amazing actor. Gloucester is this, he's sort of like Polonius in Hamlet, but he's got a bit more metal to him, and he goes on an astonishing sort of journey. He's just like a nice, nice man who is then destroyed and wrecked by the whole collapse of the kingdom.
Hello, my name is Trevor Cooper, and I'm playing Oswald and Lear's gentleman. It has a huge amount of things about tyrants, about families, about father-daughter relationship. There's a massive amount of stuff. And about father-sons with Gloucester, and as all Shakespeare is. I mean, there's nothing in Shakespeare that isn't still relevant.
He's a sort of brash manservant, but he has ambitions of power. And he goes from being basically a serving man up to, he gets raised above his position, he becomes like a very important character, and then he meets his comeuppance. And we had Trevor Cooper, who in fact has played Gloucester before, a stage production. So he was again fantastic. He absolutely knows how to do his Shakespeare stuff. And then Nick Pegg, when he created the script, created this character called Lear's Gentleman, who is an amalgamation of all the kind of bit parts who come in and say a few phrases come out. And we wanted to create, because it's audio and it's very confusing if you have 60 or 70 different characters all saying things, so we wanted to create this through line of Lear's Gentleman, and Trevor played that as well. And he even has kind of a fight with himself and things. So he's brilliant at that.
I think had I not done it before, it would be more difficult. The fact that I've done it before means I know the basic sweep of it. And that is very helpful. I think if I hadn't done it before, I wouldn't know where I was.
And you've got Paul Shelley as well, the most loyal, playing the Earl of Kent, the most loyal supporter of Lear. Also quite a big ask, because he has to, on audio, disguise himself, because Kent is banished in the first scene, but he then joins up with Lear in the guise of this serving man. And I remember from previously working with Paul Shelley how good he was at doing Yorkshire. He's kind of from Yorkshire. And it's just fantastic. We were just knocked out, because we only had him for one day, and his performance is just knockout. He did the entire play, in just his bits in one day. Amazing, amazing, astonishing performance. Such clarity on the text.
I'm Paul Shelley, and I'm playing the Earl of Kent in King Lear. God, it's got such a past for me. Starting at school, our English teacher used to quote a line at us in class before we did our A-levels, and we were supposed to be able to quote the next line, and most of us could. I have to say, it was amazing, and I amazed myself, because he was such a great English master. You know, they're there. And then I played Lear twice, once in a sort of chamber Lear, twice before I was 40. That's a bit of a record. And then I did Edmund with Donald Sinden, and then I did Albany for Jonathan Kent. And then I did Gloucester with David Haig as Lear a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. So it's a wonderful play, and I almost know it too well now.
We've already talked about Gwilym Lee being amazing as Edgar. And, of course, Edmund, we have Ray Coulthard, who we've worked with before on some Doctor Who's, and he's just an amazing... So, I mean, it's silly to speak about stillness on audio, but Ray has a fantastic stillness, and the hardest soliloquies, apart from Lear's, obviously the hardest soliloquies to do are Edmund's ones, because the temptation is just to sort of twirl your moustache and go, nah, ha, ha, ha. But there's a real grievance there that Edmund has, and he just beautifully took you through that. And Ray is such a class act.
My name is Raymond Coulthard, and I play Edmund. I suppose it's always the same thing for me, in that inevitably you hate Edmund for what he's doing. What I always find fascinating is, of course, when you then play it, you have to love him as an actor playing it. I've got to love him and understand him. And I suppose that. I think that I did certainly grow to understand and love Edmund, and I think you can only ever do that if you play it. I think if you listen to it or read it or watch it, you will never fall in love with Edmund, but I did. So I guess that was my discovery. I think, as ever with Shakespeare, I think there's such universal themes of connection and love and, you know, people making good or bad decisions in the right time or the wrong time that have all sorts of consequences. And I think that's why Shakespeare survives. I don't think it's about the topicality of the subject, which I know often that's done with Shakespeare, that you make it as topical as you can to your time, I suppose. But I think beyond that, I think there's the human angle of Shakespeare, I think, is always what comes through and what lives on, and I think what we always invariably, inevitably identify with.
I studied King Lear for A-level, and I became quite obsessed with it. I remember I ended up pretty much learning the entire play by heart. Even before I'd seen it on stage, I was given an audio play, which actually starred Paul Scofield as Lear, which I played endlessly. after a while, I did see it on stage. I don't remember who was in it, but again, it only really made me love it more and more. The more I saw it, the more I encountered it. It's so rich. There's so much to find in it, and I'm still finding things out about it now, all those years later, as we work on it on audio. In its broadest sense, it's about a group of characters who start to lose their humanity, start to lose their reason, and then also characters who start to find their humanity and start to embrace reason.
King Lear holds a very special place in my heart, actually. It was the first play that I read when I was at school that I really engaged with, partly because we had a good teacher that kind of pointed me in the right directions, but it was the first play that I ever started to unlock and realise that Shakespeare isn't a foreign language, and it also just blew my mind, the scale of it. So it's probably a big part of the reason as to why I'm an actor now, I think. I absolutely adore it.
It's one of the first plays I saw when I was a teenager, and I used to hitchhike between to the nearest theatre, which was a long way from where I lived, and whatever was on, I saw it, and I saw Lear. Didn't understand very much about it. It was a play I performed once at drama school, and didn't understand very much about it, but I was a little more enlightened as we went along, and I've seen David Warner's Lear at Chichester at the Minerva, and I saw Ian Holmes' Lear at the National Theatre, and I've seen a few. I seem to have seen a lot of Lears. A lot of leering went on. So what it means to me, as I've deciphered it and made it understandable, the storylines and the lines, and you realise it has so many themes running through it. It's got the theme of age and dying and insanity and power.
So many times when I was at the RSC, I think it must have come in the repertoire about at least four times. I think I've seen Lear more than I've seen any other Shakespeare play. And this is the first time I've been in it. Lear always seems to me the father of Shakespeare's plays. I always see it as the big aria, the one that you get to, I mean, as an actor, that it's more or less the last one that most people play in the canon. But also as well, I always relate it to, even though, you know, Lear's rage, you know, the storm and all that that entails. But yes, I sort of see it as the father of all of Shakespeare plays.
It's my favourite Shakespeare. I mean, I think it's terrific. I've done it once on stage at the Tobacco Factory in Bristol, where I played Gloucester to John Shrapnel's Lear, which was very successful, and I loved it. I mean, it's an extraordinary play. We didn't have a lot of time to do it in, but we got it together, and it really is. It's a very, very moving piece.
I have to say, I've never seen King Lear. Amazingly, I'd read it, so knew it, but have never seen it. So actually, I know that having read it, the one part I've always wanted to play is Edmund. And I think the age I am now, I think the only chance I'm ever going to get to have a go is on radio, is audio.
A couple of times, you know, someone's done a line and you think, oh, that's a... I hadn't thought of it being done that way. There's a couple, particularly things like... what Mike's doing with The Fool, you know, and you think, oh, right, that's lovely, you know. And also, I mean, and David's extraordinary as Lear, some of that stuff. And so, I mean, and David's played it before on stage, and you can tell he knows where the peaks and troughs are and knows when to be intimate and when to be full thunder and all that, you know. And I think that is useful. I think it is useful for anyone that's in it who's been, you know, done it before in some way.
The recording process has been huge fun, and considering the logistical demands, Barnaby was very clever the way he worked out his schedule. We had 3 days to record, but of course it would be tremendously expensive. Even Big Finish, with its limitless riches, would have found it difficult to get the entire cast in on all 3 days. So Barnaby worked out a very clever schedule whereby, as much as possible, we could have everybody there for each scene, but every now and then some people weren't there on the same day, so we had to record the scenes twice. So for me, one of the interesting things of this 3 days has been that I have found myself not only playing the characters that I'm actually playing, but I've also played pretty much everybody else, including the three female characters. From time to time, I've been reading in all of them. So yeah, it's been huge fun, and everyone's been so good, you know. I mean, just wonderful cast that Barnaby has brought together. And getting people who can just get a major Shakespearean tragedy on its feet and working in 3 days in the studio is no mean feat, you know. 3 weeks of rehearsal would be normally considered quite meagre for Shakespeare. We've done the whole thing in 3 days in the studio. So, yeah, hats off to everyone.
Recording it out of order is never a problem for me because I'm so used to doing that when I've done films and things like that. And also I find it fascinating. It's like putting a jigsaw together. And it's a kind of mental challenge with films, which I've done. You never do it in order. And often you do the last scene first in a film and shoot that first and do it all out. So, no, it didn't worry me at all. And, of course, you know, having done it, it made it slightly easier.
It's an incredibly bleak play, which makes me wonder, actually. I find it fascinating why I did fall in love with it so much when I was so young, because it is so mature and brutal and sophisticated. And, I actually, at the end of the day, I mean, thanks to my love of King Lear, I did pass my A-level English literature and I got an A. So it did me well.
It's one of my favourite casts, and I had to make sure that people could do Shakespeare. And pretty much once that was done, once the script was in place and once the cast was in place, my job was just making sure that we recorded everything, because people's performances are so there. I just had to really kind of make sure that people were all in the same production, make sure that we were all in the same version of King Lear. But of course that's led by David Warner in an astonishing performance. And, you know, people matched their performances to his and they took their sort of tone off him. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been quite difficult and long days and long preparation and stuff like that, but it's paid off in that it's just a pleasure to hear a great play done really well.